welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 Days. Akiva, today we have the third-ranked New England Patriots.
Our favorite team.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because this is a podcast that's been delayed a couple of times, and we intentionally delayed it actually a couple of times because we wanted to make sure that the judge's ruling came down on Balghazi, as I refer to it, or Deflategate, as the more uptight media refer to it. And then we got delayed another couple days. And in hindsight, I guess it's really good that we did, because the consequence is that today, Outside the Lines, ESPN just dropped this massive piece on sort of the background of the Patriots cheating, and you know, the theory being that the overzealous actions of the NFL in the last few months were a reaction, a corrective, a makeup call, as a few owners explicitly called it, for their complicity in the cover-up related to Spygate.
Really, the timing is very interesting about this.
Yeah, the truth is, just about any day this offseason that we had a Pats podcast, there would have been something to talk about. You know, they've been in the news pretty much every day. But yeah, but this art, well, in terms of this article, clearly they were waiting to get the results of the hearing, right? And then they print it on a Tuesday, because they're not going to print it over a long weekend. But yeah, I mean, Don Vanatta, he is like, you know, he's like one of the best investigative journalists in the country. And I mean, this is a serious piece. And to be fair, I haven't read the entire thing yet, but I've read sort of outlines and discussions of it on a number of websites. And I've read the first half of the article myself, and I will read the rest of it, but not in time for us to record this podcast. So, you know, let me ask you as a Jets fan, because the initial thought that people had of Spygate, while we're on that one, is that this was something between the Pats and the Jets, and it was Mangini getting back at his former team. And then, of course, everybody knew that the NFL destroyed the evidence, you know, and it was sort of assumed it was done by Goodell to cover up for his buddy Kraft, but nobody really knew or cared that much, other than Jets fans, who obviously hated the Patriots for a number of reasons.
Well, Rams fans probably cared too, since they lost to the Patriots in the Super Bowl where they got spied on.
Yeah, yeah, but now that the evidence shows that, you know, that there was just a series of, there's at least 40 different teams that they had recordings of, plus, you know, they were at home games. They would intentionally cut out the microphones of you know, between the quarterback and the middle linebacker and the coach on key plays, that, you know, that they were stealing playbooks from hotel rooms. I mean, do you as a Jets fan feel somewhat vindicated that your whining from 2007 has sort of you know, been vindicated a little bit?
No, because the Patriots still have their four titles. You know, I think it's almost like, I don't even blame the Patriots. I blame the league for enabling them. Like, why are the teams allowed to control the frequencies that they, you know, go to the quarterback or the defensive captain? Like, what, you know, why is that has the league not been in charge of that for 20 years? Like, they've allowed the Belichick Brady regime to run amok. And, you know, this is the thanks they get.
And to be fair, I wouldn't implicate Brady in that, you know, and I'll say this, when A-Rod slapped at Jason Veritek in the ALCS in 2003, and that became a meme on the internet with, you know, the purse and all that, and people in New England were saying, oh, A-Rod's a cheater and all that, I disagreed. I said, no, as a player on the field, you do whatever you can to win. You know, if you're running for a touchdown,
it's like Ken Herbeck lifting the guy's leg off first base and cheating.
He didn't do anything wrong. Look, if you're running down the field and your knee grazes the ground, should you get up and say, sorry guys, my knee hit the ground? No, you get up and keep running. It's up to the officials. It's up to the league to enforce the rules. And one of the reasons why Balghazi has been silly is because, you know, 8 or 9 years ago, it was Tom Brady and Peyton Manning who went to the NFL and said, hey guys, listen, can we have control of the balls, not the league, because we want to doctor the balls to be more to our benefit. And the league said, sure. So then to turn around and make a big deal out of what Brady subsequently did is completely insane. And now it seems like the evidence is, well, it was a makeup call. And makeup calls, by their definition, are bad calls that you make to make up for a bad call in the opposite direction. And of course, two wrongs don't make a right. And Roger Goodell, it's hard to me to imagine that he keeps his job, but he's kept it for so long that who knows.
I mean, he's, you know, I think at this point the owners they don't get blamed for anything. They like having him as the guy who's literally going to be blamed for every single thing.
Well, and the article quotes repeatedly the owner saying they were pissed at Goodell for what he did with Spygate, but they're happy with what he did this time. His overzealousness is what they wanted to see. But if overzealousness backfires, you know, well, let me ask you, Akiva, if you're making a prediction, will Roger Goodell, you know, he's already trying to make himself not seen. He's not showing up to the game tomorrow night. Will he be the one to hand the trophy over to the winner of the Super Bowl in February?
Yeah, I mean, what they'll probably do, listen, Gary Bettman gets booed every year that the Stanley Cup Finals are not in California, where the fans are too dumb to boo. You know, and he still hands over the trophy. Maybe they'll do something where it's the 50th Super Bowl, so, you know, some, you know, some legend hands over the Super Bowl instead. But yeah, he'll be there. It's not like he's not going to be at any games this year.
Well, so no, I agree with you. The answer to that one's probably yes. But my next question is, will he be the commissioner of the league at the draft next April?
Yeah, I mean, he makes like $45 million. It would cost a couple hundred million dollars to fire him. Not that the league doesn't have it if they absolutely needed to, but I don't see. I do think it's possible, but I also think it's a little bit like the WWE and Vince McMahon. Like, the people who follow the WWE like hate Vince McMahon, but they don't watch it.
Yeah, but Vince McMahon's also the owner there. He's the
right,
CEO.
Right, totally. But it is a publicly traded company. Goodell's an employee of the owners. Like, unless he owns over 50%.
No, there is a board, and I'm sure there would be a process. Well, you know what? So let's bring our Pats fan in to join this conversation, because I'm sure that he will have some opinions. So joining us to talk about the Pats today is Michael Clark. Mike, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you for having me. And thank you to Bill Simmons for saying no.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, Bill is actually not allowed to be on any other podcasts as part of his non-compete until October. So he actually told us, he said, I will come on the podcast, but you have to wait till October. And we said, listen, Billy, it's 32 fans in 32 days. So we're turning to Mike Clark. And actually, now that you mentioned Bill Simmons, I mean, now he's obviously almost being tongue-in-cheek as a Boston homer, but his comments on Twitter today were so idiotic. He went on a rant about how the Panthers weren't actually that good of a team, you know, that the Patriots beat in the Super Bowl, and the Eagles always, you know, crashed at the end in the Reed McNabb era. So therefore, and it's like, so therefore what? Like, Richard Nixon would have won in 1972 over McGovern in a landslide, regardless of Watergate. That doesn't mean, the fact that you don't really need it doesn't absolve cheating. You know, rich people aren't allowed to steal money because, well, they're already rich. I mean, that lot now, you know, and it's also interesting, I'll say, that the Pats came out with a statement today, and they were very careful. They did not deny any of the allegations in that article. What they denied taping other teams' practices, which was related to the original Spygate with the Jets. But this article doesn't talk about taping practices. This article talks about taping 40 games, you know, taping the sidelines during games, which is illegal, tape it, and then, as we said, you know, stealing the playbooks and cutting out the mics. But the Patriots did not deny any of that. What they did is, in their statement, they said that Bill Belichick is an all-time great coach, and Robert Kraft is an all-time great owner, and Tom Brady is an all-time great quarterback. And that's all true, but that's all obvious. I mean, that's irrelevant. So,
yeah,
you know.
I remember I was watching SportsCenter a couple weeks ago, and Steve Levy randomly just reads an apology to the Patriots for just like false reporting on stories that ended up like later being disclaimed. And I just remember watching them saying, I don't know what Steve Levy's talking about. What's going on? And so, like, reading the Outside the Lines thing today, I said, oh, okay, maybe that's what they're referring to.
Well, no, that was a specific, yeah, that was one source in 2002. Yeah, and that has been disproven. But, you know, this is, as we said before you came on, Don Vanatta was one of the premier investigative journalists in the country. You know, he's won Pulitzer Prizes for his coverage of Al-Qaeda, for his coverage of, you know, I think like the 2000 election in Florida and China, I mean, very serious issues. And this is a deeply, deeply sourced article. Yeah, but the apology was for, and there's been no question that there's been a lot of misinformation, especially as regards to the Balghazi scandal, you know, which, as we said, wasn't really nearly the issue of what was going on, you know, vis-a-vis Spygate and the other issues between 2000 and 2007. And there's been a lot of misinformation. In fact, I think Patriots fans have a good argument that this entire thing stemmed from a false tweet that Chris Mortensen said, right, about 11 of the 12 balls.
Sure.
Yeah. So yeah, there's certainly been a lot of false there. But you know, I don't know if you can really impugn Vanatta. And, you know, I think he has 90 sources in this article. And, you know, my dad went to college with Bill Belichick, and he said Belichick was famous in college for, he organized an entire array of former exams that other teachers gave. He called it Messora. But Akiva, you didn't get my reference, did you?
I did, but I had no idea where you're going with it.
Yeah, I was just trying to say that Belichick's been a cheater. I mean, the article talks about this Ernie Adams, who's sort of the consigliere and the man behind the scenes with Belichick all the way from prep school, actually. And he was the one who, you know, they started this process in a more rudimentary way in Cleveland. And, you know, Belichick, obviously, once he got to the big time, once he got a second chance as a head coach, he was going to do everything it took to win. Yeah.
What do you think Ernie Adams gets paid? Like, what is it? What's the job being his, like, right-hand man? You know, looking at all the videotapes, what is that job pulling down?
Well, the article says that Art Modell openly said in Cleveland that he would pay any other person in the front, in the office, $10,000 if they could tell him what Adams did. Because nobody knows what Adams did. Adams just did the dirty work for Belichick and was, you know, was don't ask, don't tell, basically. And also, the article says that he's independently wealthy. He's the second wealthiest guy in New England after after Robert Kraft, the article jokes.
Ernie Adams?
So, yeah. So he's independently wealthy. And he's also a fan of ratty old sweatshirts. So maybe him and Belichick really do have a lot in common there.
Maybe that's their business, the Schmata business.
Yeah, and that's how they made all their money. I do think that Goodell is much more to blame here than Belichick, frankly, for the same reason that I thought, you know, to sort of drop another hot take and enrage more people. I always thought with the Penn State scandal that Joe Paterno was worse than Jerry Sandusky, in the sense that, look, Jerry Sandusky is a monster, and a monster, you know, is completely unforgivable. But Joe Paterno was a regular person like you or me who had an opportunity to do something about somebody who was bad, and decided for his own convenience and for his own enrichment to look the other way and cover it up.
Sandusky was beyond hope.
Yeah, exactly. Now, again, I'm not comparing cheating in football to the terrible thing Sandusky did, but I can't relate to Sandusky because he was an animal. He was subhuman in his crimes. But I can relate to somebody who comes across that like Paterno did and really did the wrong thing in a dramatic way. And Goodell, clearly, you know, he's put what he defines as the league's best interest over accuracy and honesty. And it's hurt a lot of people. It's hurt a lot of teams. And, you know, the Patriots benefited from it apparently for years, but suffered the consequences this offseason. And, you know, Mike, tell us what it was like to be a Pats fan this offseason, wanting to celebrate, you know, a fourth Super Bowl title, and yet you had to deal with all this mishigas, as we say, sure, that was distracting.
Sure. Well, you know, I remember specifically, I called my father a couple of days after the AFC Championship game, and it was in the afternoon, and I called him, and I said, "Dad, I want one Super Bowl. I want one that isn't, like, clouded in mystery. I want one that people can't point to and say, yeah, but you cheated." Like,
want a Super Bowl even if it is clouded in mystery, Mike.
Yeah. I'll take a cheating Super Bowl. Yes. Absolutely.
Patriot fans are so spoiled. I'll lose the cheating Super Bowl.
Yeah, I just want to go to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's difficult to try to have a sophisticated, fact-driven conversation with someone about the Patriots when the only thing they'll come back to you with was, "Well, they're cheaters. Well, they cheated." I personally always held out hope that Tom would be playing in week one. And I'm really glad that it will be. It was difficult. Of course, like, I was very happy to have won the Super Bowl. I need to stop doing that. I didn't win the Super Bowl. My team won the Super Bowl. But it was just, it was difficult. And I lived in Massachusetts at the time. I moved back to New York since. And there's a lot of homerism and a lot of the talk radio, like, really, trumpeting the Pats and celebrating them. But, like, I understand that a lot of people who listen to this podcast will be hate listening to it. I understand the fact that, you know, I support a team that, you know, 31 others kind of scoff at. So it's hard, but, you know, I'm a loyal Pats fan.
Yeah, what I'm actually looking forward to is seeing some of the more well-reasoned Pats fans that I follow on Twitter and that I read in my various media consumption, how they'll react to this, because they've been very defensive and dismissive all offseason. And again, I think rightfully so, because ultimately the facts this offseason really were not, you know, were favorable to the Patriots. You know, did Tom Brady do absolutely 100% nothing wrong? I'm sure that he didn't mind that the balls were deflated, but ultimately the consequence for that is supposed to be a $25,000 fine and move on. Nobody cares, right?
Sure.
And so, you know, the witch hunt, which again now we see was, you know, again, quote unquote, a makeup call. So, Pats fans were really aggrieved, and some of them I thought were getting a little homeristic, but I thought that they had sort of some validity to that. So I'll be interested to see how they react to, again, Bill Simmons is a homer, I'm dismissing him, but people who are, you know, like, for example, I follow Michael Schur, Ken Tremendous, on Twitter, and also he has a podcast with Joe Posnanski, and, you know, he's a reasonable fella, I think. And so I'll be interested to hear what people like him have to say. But you know what? Ultimately, again, the goal is to win. And I don't fault the cheaters. I fault the people who are supposed to supervise the cheaters. So, sure. I think Goodell's is.
I think if Goodell could do it again, he probably wouldn't laugh maniacally when someone referenced good job doing what you did to the Pats. Probably think he would do that over again.
Yeah.
Goodell's although really like a textbook villain at this point.
But it's so funny because the owners, I mean, in that article, the owners were quoting as saying, oh, if he was in Congress, he'd be the majority leader by now. It's like, what planet are you living on? If Goodell had an elected position, he would have lost in a landslide, you know? Fortunately for him, his position is only elected by the owners. So I think that a lot of the owners are living in their own little, you know, cloud. And the argument
but it's a lot of people, not all of them, but there's a lot of people who, you know, have you know, sort of gone about through their own nefarious ways, or you know, people like Ziggy Wilf and
and
Haslam, Brown's owner, who were like, you know, constantly under, or you know, were people like Woody Johnson, who basically inherited all their money. So you know,
under various legal suspicions, you're saying in their acquisition of wealth.
I'm just saying, like, these aren't like the most upstanding people who are just interested in having someone who's a good guy. Like, they're sole concern for Goodell is he making the money, and he is, so who cares in their eyes?
Yeah, and but the part I wonder is, are they making money because of Goodell, or would they be making money?
Oh yeah, I think if we you and I were co-commissioners, they'd be at 90% of what they are right now.
So yeah, so that, and look, people hated Bud Selig and thought that he sort of looked the other way and was involved with the cover-up of steroids for many years. But ultimately, while it may stain his quote-unquote legacy for whatever that's worth, he, you know, got to a commission until he decided to retire of his own accord. So we'll see what happens with Goodell. He's certainly a villain, and it's enjoyable to have villains. And so from that perspective, I almost, you know, like when David Stern left, it almost made the NBA more boring in a sense.
Yeah, and Stern came out, and I think Stern is in favor of Goodell and was anti-Berman.
Well, but these commissioners are all going to stick together. Sure. Vis-a-vis, you know,
they have their own special commissioner club.
Yeah, but yeah, but they don't want, you know, federal courts intervening on their jurisdiction. But,
I would say that every time I read an article about the court ruling and I would see Judge Berman, I would always picture Chris Berman as the judge and like Tom Jackson as the bailiff. And,
oh boy, that would be bad for you because I think Chris Berman's a Bills homer. So
I hear right. No one circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. That's just a rumor I've heard.
Yeah. All right. So let's turn to this actual team on the field. As I understand it, the New England Patriots will be taking the field, all 48 of them, including Tom Brady, tomorrow night against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Minus LeGarrette Blount, but okay.
That's true. Minus LeGarrette Blount, who I have on my fantasy team. So I hope that whoever replaces him doesn't do too well in week one. But I would also imagine that Tom Brady's going to throw for about 600 yards and 10 touchdowns tomorrow night. What do you think?
I think Tom will have a good game. I think Tom likes to play against the Pittsburgh secondary. He's going to miss LaFell, of course. But yeah, I could see Tom in FU mode tomorrow.
All right, so talk a little bit about the offense, some of the changes that the offense has made. You know, as we said, Blount looks like he's probably going to be the leader in the backfield with Stephen Ridley gone, and there was talk of Jonas Gray, but obviously he is no longer part of the picture either. And then at receiver, as you said, you have LaFell is injured, and in the offseason also Shane Vereen left, who, you know, got caught a lot of passes out of the backfield. So talk to us a little bit about who he has around him in the offense and, you know, what changes you think they're going to be.
Okay. Well, he has, you know, old reliable Gronk, and I'm very excited about another full season of Gronk. Hopefully, we will get all 16 games. Won't hurt himself. Edelman is, you know, one of the sure targets in the NFL. Him and Tom love playing with each other. Amendola came on towards the end of last year, so I think that, you know, he could do something. I liked what I saw from Deion Lewis in the preseason, but it's preseason. So, and I also really liked the acquisition of Scott Chandler as the tight end number two, just because I feel like whenever the Pats would play the Bills, Scott Chandler would like go off for like 7 and 75 with a
touchdown. Cosine is a Jet fan. He's like the biggest guy in the league, and he's really scary. And you'll play him, and he'll have like 5 catches in the first quarter, and then you'll never see him again. But you'll be like, man, that guy's good.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've dabbled with him on my fantasy team before. Never has been a great fantasy player, but he comes up big against the Pats for some reason. So hopefully he can, play well as the second tight end. I think they're going to do a lot of two tight end sets this year, especially with LaFell out for so long.
Yeah, I think, you know, you talk about like a five-man lineup that they would throw with Gronk, Chandler, Edelman, you know, one of the receiver du jour and a Blunt when he comes back, or a whoever. I think Deion Lewis may end up being that second guy there. I'm not sure. But, you know, that's still a pretty, you know, probably above average sort of group of players for what Brady had during some of the, you know, like the middle 2000 years. But what really scares me, you know, they're solid at tackle with Vollmer and Solder. But when you look at the teams they're going to be playing a lot, you know, the Jets, Dolphins, and Bills, each one has a more like absurdly frightening front seven and a particular defensive line than the next. And it seems like the weakness of the whole team might be the interior O-line. So have they done anything to shore it up? Are you just as nervous as, you know, I am for the Patriots looking in that, you know, I mean, the Bills have Mario Williams, Kyle Williams, Marcel Darius, and that's probably the worst front seven in the division.
Sure. Well, you know, Ryan Wendell is replacement level. He's fine. They drafted Trey Jackson and Shaq Mason. You always like to have a Shaq on your team. Yeah, you know, I think that it's definitely they're going to struggle. I think the offensive line, and Tom can be kind of statuesque back there. You know, he's usually pretty good at you know, kind of pocket presence and feeling when he should get rid of the ball. But you know, there'll be plenty of times where he's sacked. He fumbles a lot when he's sacked. So, you know, I'm hoping to kind of limit that a little bit. And I don't remember on which podcast, but you were talking about how, you know, Tom doesn't really move around a lot. And what I'll say about it is on the rare occasions that Tom will decide to run, usually pretty like he knows when to pick his spots.
Yeah, but that's happening once a season at this point when he's 30.
No, well, I mean, as someone who like watches every game, you know, on fourth and inches.
Yeah, wasn't he like perfect?
The hurry up,
right, right. Yeah, I don't consider that running, but yeah, yeah.
Didn't he have that statistic that till last year in his career he was like 22 for 22 on fourth and one sneaks or something?
I don't know
like that?
If I've ever seen him stuffed on that.
And what do you see? Obviously, he's not going to be playing now, but it looked like you were going to be stuck with him for the first month. So, did you see anything about Garoppolo that makes you a little bit okay about the future?
I thought Garoppolo played very well in, I think it was the New Orleans game. He was terrible in the Green Bay game, but he played well in the New Orleans game. You know, granted, it was against, you know, a second-rate defense, and that wasn't even their A starter. So let me take that with a grain of salt. But, you know, this is the same system that, you know, Matt Cassel won 11 games with and was almost a playoff quarterback. So I think Garoppolo would have been okay. I'm glad I don't have to deal with that this year, knock on wood, but I think it would have been okay.
Yeah, you know, it's Brady was you know, in 2013 he had a relatively a down season. He was closer to average, frankly, and then the first month of last year was similar, and you even heard some jokers, you know, in New England talking about Garoppolo, and then of course he went on a crazy tear the second half of the year through the playoffs and into the Super Bowl.
I was at that I was at the on to Cincinnati game. I was at that Cincinnati game where Tom went off and the everyone was chanting that the Tom week, Brady.
Was that the week after the Kansas City game?
It was.
Oh, okay.
And everyone was picking Cincinnati and saying, we don't see any reason why you should pick the Pats. And honestly, like, they were terrible the week before. So yeah, they shouldn't have picked the Pats, but they just kind of put their foot on the accelerator and didn't really let off the entire year.
But you're confident that if Garoppolo had to step in for a game or two, things would be okay.
Yeah. Okay. Not ideal, but okay.
All right. Okay. So let's jump now to the roster game. You know, a number of Pats have been cut from the original 90, and it's probably been hard for you to focus on the training camp roster with everything else going on in the offseason, but throw us a number 1 to 100, and I have deciphered Akiva's secret code, but hopefully you haven't, so he will throw a random player at you.
In honor of my boy Tom, give me 12, TB12.
Tell me about Malcolm Brown.
Malcolm Brown. He was the first round pick this year from Texas. He's going to be on the D line. I think they're, you know, hoping that he can provide some pressure. He's got very big shoes to fill, literally, from Vince Wilfork. You know, I think he should. I think he should be okay.
Do you think, by the way, they should get those picks back? They should get the Deflategate picks back.
I think they should leave well enough alone.
Okay. I mean, honestly, they said they're not arguing with them.
So. And to be honest, like, Bill always trades those picks anyway, so I don't care. personally.
Right. It's not the first pick. It's usually 32 or 31. All right. Give me another number.
81.
Okay. Talk about Matthew Slater.
Matt Slater. Oh, man. Special teams master. He's made about like 100 Pro Bowls in a row. There, you know, he lined up in wide receiver a little bit in the preseason. You're not going to see him do that during the year. He just makes a lot of plays on special teams. One of our captains. I can't tell you a whole bunch about what he does exactly, but I'm glad to have him on our team.
Wait, I just have a question about Matt Slater. He's, you know, a tiny, skinny little special teams receiver guy. His dad is a Hall of Fame offensive lineman, like a huge tackle. Is there a bigger difference between the playing styles of a father and son who both played professionally in the same league?
About Dell and
that's
Stephen
a fun
Curry?
Question.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
No, they're very similar. Dell and Stephen, you know, Dell was just a three-point shooter. I mean, obviously, Stephen's much better than his father, but, you know, player.
Yeah, I was trying to think if you had like if
right if Prince if Prince Cecil Fielder's son
if Prince
was
Fielder
like,
was a shortstop was, like
yeah
yeah
if Prince Fielder's if
was David Eckstein.
I was gonna say Eric Young's son.
Yeah. Oh yeah. If they swap kids. Yeah, they should have done that swap like kids. Those Yankees in the '70s.
Kid swap. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but yeah, that you know that Yankee swap it was kids and wives.
But what if it was Nate Newton's son was like a white punter? That would be pretty big. That's a big difference.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. Yeah, I guess he could be adopted.
Sure. Or whatever. Okay, one more number.
What about the tunes, Nick and Al?
Well, they both play the same position. Both just receiver, one was very though. Good and one is, you know, out of the NFL.
I guess.
All right, one more number.
20.
Danny Amendola. Let me ask you, since, you know, we know about Danny Amendola. Yeah, is he a product of the system or do you think he, what's it called? Like, you know, with the Rams, like that he was actually playing well, like, and for some reason, he's one of the only guys who actually came to New England and got worse, or what's gone wrong with Amendola on the Patriots?
I think Amendola, he's had a trouble staying on the field. You know, when we signed him, he was kind of supposed to be the Welker replacement, but then Edelman.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh my God, he's going to have 120 receptions, and, you know.
Yeah. And just, you know, he was inconsistent. He wasn't staying on the field. And I just don't know if the trust was there between him and Tom. I think, you know, a Super Bowl run last year and the fact that he was effective in the postseason. You know, he caught that gadget pass from Edelman. I think that does a lot for the trust between him and Tom. And I think he kind of has to step up with LaFell out. So I don't know. I'm optimistic about Amendola, but he's burnt me before.
Yeah, there's few people that I've been more wrong on than Amendola, because Wes Welker, when he was coming out of Miami, he considered the Vikings before he signed with the Patriots. And I said to my dad when the Patriots got him, I said, oh, he's a nobody. He has, you know, fewer than 100 career catches. He's never had, you know, 700 yards. He's never had more than a touchdown. He had one career touchdown, I think, at that point. And then, of course, he immediately, you know, led the league in receptions for the next 7 years. And so Amendola in St. Louis, of course, he was banged up. But when he was playing, he was actually really good, I thought.
Yeah, he had an 85 catch season for the Rams, and nobody does that anymore.
Yeah, so I thought... Yeah, so I thought that he was going to be much, at least as good as Welker. And then, yeah, but he just hasn't stayed healthy. So
I think Welker benefited a lot from being opposite the greatest of all time receiving season ever. Super excited to see Randy Moss hang out at Pats camp this year. I think all Pats fans have very warm feelings towards Randy Moss. Are Viking fans the same way, Chester? Do they love him?
We loved him, and then he left on a bad note, of course. And then we were a little bit embittered about that. And then I was living in Boston, unfortunately, from 2007 to 2010, when David Ortiz, former twin, led the Red Sox to a World Series title. Kevin Garnett, my favorite athlete ever, led the Celtics to a title. And Randy Moss, my favorite Viking ever, led the Pats to an undefeated season. So we were bitter about that. And then, of course, when he got traded back to the Vikings, which Bill Simmons accidentally broke with a mistaken DM that he actually tweeted out. Of course, I was so pumped that I found my Randy Moss jersey deep in the cupboards, and I immediately went to the next Vikings game, which was Monday night against the Jets. And then things ended very, very poorly there. And, you know, he insulted, you know, the poor caterer's food, and he seemed like a jerk. But, you know, look, there was nobody more exciting to watch in his prime, both in Minnesota and in New England, than Randy Moss. Like every time the quarterback dropped deep, whether it was Randall Cunningham or Jeff George or Brad Johnson or Dante Culpepper or Tom Brady, your breath just stops for a second. What? As that it's just so exciting. You know,
even the
so
last play in the Super Bowl against the Giants, like, you know, and Brady threw that up and you're like, oh, Moss is going to catch this. And he really,
yeah,
it was, you know, an inch away from, he didn't jump for that ball, of course, because he's Randy Moss. But if he jumps, he maybe makes that catch and scores or gets tackled at the three.
Yeah. I also was touched by the letter.
People forgot he had the go-ahead touchdown in that game also before the last Giants drive.
Well, people should forget, if you're a Patriots fan, most of the things about that game, to be fair, Mike.
As you know, it's funny, as one of these rare creatures who's a Pats fan and a Yankee fan, I experienced...
Oh, my goodness.
I had to experience the 2004 ALCS and that Super Bowl on the wrong side.
Let me guess, you're a Lakers fan also.
Well, yeah. How are you going to defend being a Pats fan and a Yankees fan?
Okay. I'm a Yankee fan because I was like put in Yankee clothes as a baby. I come from a family of Yankee fans, so that one was never going to change. I was born in New York. My father is a Cowboy fan.
What is with this family?
Oh man,
my father's a Cowboy fan. We have to have the whole Clarks on.
You guys should be in that NFL commercial. Like whichever generation, whoever is going to the Super Bowl the most in the decade of their formation as a fan. All right, sorry. Go ahead.
So growing up, I rooted for the Cowboys because I wanted to be like my dad, and I
in the '90s when they were going to the Super Bowl. Yeah, understood.
Of course. and then I reached an age.
When the Patriots were going to the Super Bowl every year.
So you're going to be a Colts fan next decade? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely not. I reached an age where I decided I could pick my own team. And what happened was when Bledsoe went down, thank you, Mo Lewis, when Bledsoe went down in that game and Brady came in, I remembered Brady kind of getting jobbed at Michigan when he kind of had to switch time with Drew Henson. So I said, I hope this guy does well. And I started rooting for Tom, and I fell in love with the team. So I've been defending myself against being a front runner for 15 years now, but I am a very loyal New England Patriots fan.
All right. I will just mention, I actually witnessed the end of Drew Henson's professional career. In 2001, I was at a minor league baseball game in Pennsylvania. And Drew Henson was, you know, it was the Yankees AAA affiliate where we're playing the Scranton Wilkes-Barre, who I think it's like the Phillies AAA affiliate at the time. And the score was like 18-2 in the eighth inning. And both sides initiated a benches clearing brawl. And Drew Henson slugged somebody and broke his shoulder and missed the rest of that season. And that effectively ended his career both with the Cowboys and with the Yankees. And I got to see it live. So, you know, kids, go to minor league baseball games. You never know who will end their career in a bases ending brawl. It was also fantastic because I went with camp, and so I was sitting with a bunch of people who were not baseball fans at all, but I was sitting with a bunch of folks who had never been to a baseball game before, and they were so confused / entertained / delighted, as we all are, by the brawl, but they couldn't fathom. They're like, what is going on? Because we're trying to explain the rules to them. And
between the 04 ALCS and that Super Bowl, which do you think hurt more for me?
Well, in both cases, you had already won a whole bunch of championships. So I guess maybe the LCS because the Red Sox are a hated rival.
No, it was the Super Bowl and it wasn't close.
Because you get the undefeated season, I guess.
I hate the Giants.
Right, that transcended just being a fan of a team, yeah.
Wait, but you can't hate the Giants more than you hate the Red Sox. Yankees-Red Sox is like the big, is a much bigger rival.
I despise the Red Sox also, but I've always hated the New York Giants.
Boy, you must confuse people.
Yeah.
You must really confuse people as a Yankees fan, Red Sox hater, Patriots fan, Giant hater.
Absolutely. There's a bunch of us in Connecticut, I think.
But you hate the Mets and the Jets, I'd imagine, from both angles.
I'm okay with the Mets. The Jets are just there. I don't really.
Oof.
I think I hate the Ravens more than I hate the Jets.
Yeah,
I definitely hate the Ravens.
They play in your league, the Ravens.
Yeah, and by the way, I just wanted to say vis-a-vis Moss, I also was very touched when Myra Kraft passed away. Randy Moss sent a very nice condolence letter, which I think speaks more to the Krafts, you know, how good people they are. But it also, I thought it was nice that Moss sort of had connected to Myra.
Well, Moss will get his number retired by Minnesota, right?
Oh, of course. Well,
he needs to get retired by the Pats.
No, he should. He should.
Spent so little time in the Pats. I think you could argue that maybe just
the greatest receiving season of all time. Yeah, like, going to see a season like 2007 for Randy Moss. Never.
And he had five seasons there, didn't he? Or was it just four?
He was traded in his
fourth. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, he had such a historic season. Well, who knows? All right, so let's turn to the defense now. Sure. This is, I think, you know, the offense, at the end of the day, the offense is going to be fine one way or the other. But the defense really has a lot of question marks going into the season. From 2010 to 2013, the Pats had a significantly below average defense for 4 years in a row. Look, not that it mattered. They won 12-plus games every season. But last year, you had an elite defense, and I think a big part of that was the fact that you had Darrelle Revis erasing half of the field. And now in the secondary, you lost not only Revis, but you also lost Brandon Browner, and you lost Kyle Arrington. Now, look, we know that Bill Belichick has managed to stick, you know, Troy Brown and whoever else into the secondary with some success. But talk to us a little bit about how that secondary is coming together. And you know, we said that Brady's going to throw for 600 yards and 10 touchdowns tomorrow night, but why can't Roethlisberger do the same against this depleted secondary?
Oh, he absolutely can, for sure. I, you know, with all the hirings last year for coaching vacancies, I was surprised that you never really heard Matt Patricia's name out. And he's the Pats defensive coordinator. So he did a great job with that Pats defense last year. And I think he does a good job with kind of mixing and matching guys. And you know, they're known for having like a bend, don't break defense. You know, sometimes they can come up unclutch, but yeah, but their secondary is, you know, going to be problematic. Malcolm Butler's never going to have to pay for a drink in the Massachusetts area ever again. Like, everyone absolutely loves Malcolm Butler. I don't know if he's a shutdown guy.
Except Belichick.
Yeah, right. The loss of Revis is huge. The loss of Arrington. I loved Kyle Arrington. His loss was worse than Browner's for me. Browner, I was okay with. Browner reminded me, Akiva, a lot of your former colleague, Ronnie Harrison, in that, like, once a game he was good for just a stupid penalty and be like, ah, like Browner. But, you know, he came up big in the Super Bowl. Logan Ryan has been pretty garbage. Logan Ryan was almost cut. So I think he's fourth string now, corner. I think McCourty,
you know, the weird thing, Michael, about this defense, like, we, you know, because now we've gone through virtually every single team, and the trend in the league is like teams have these really good corners, right? And you have some, like, yeah, you know, fantastic players on the D line. You have, you know, you have Sue, and you have, you know, you have all the guys on the Jets and all the guys on the Cardinals, and you guys are the exact opposite. Right, the Patriots, nobody has any good linebackers in the league right now, but the Patriots have, like, you know, a handful of them, right?
Yeah.
Dante Hightower and Collins and Spikes and Mayo, and nobody has any safeties in the entire league, right? And you guys have two really good safeties in McCourty and Chung. But the D-line and corner, where everyone else is strong, you know, I mean, I guess if you count Chandler Jones as a defensive end, right, I think he stands up a little bit, I'm not sure. You know, then he's a good player. But other than that, you know, like you said, there's, you know, the corner, you know, cupboard is bare. And the D-line also, compared to, like we talked about, the other teams in the division, you know, it's not even playing the same sport.
Uh-huh. I think if Easley is healthy this year, I think he'll be fine on the D-line. Jabal Sheard, I think, had a good preseason, so he should be a good end. Ninkovich has a high motor. He just, you know, he's kind of in on a lot of plays. So, you know, they're not splashy guys, and they're not going to be great. But you know, I think hopefully their offense makes up for some of the defensive limitations, and hopefully
What about the loss of Will Fork?
Vince Will Fork is huge.
Literally. And yeah. are you watching Hard Knocks?
I am. I'm watching.
Did you see him put on the Patriots
South. Yeah. Yes, I saw.
Fantastic.
I can't.
I've always loved Will Fork and his wife, but yeah, he's just great.
I want to see a whole, like, documentary about his wife. No, there's always stories about, like, how, like, she's in charge and, like, she's the brains of the operation.
That video last year right after the Super Bowl where that Pats fan was wearing the Will Fork jersey. Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
And he was right next to Vince Will Fork talking about how much he loved Vince Will Fork, and he didn't know he was talking to Vince Will Fork.
Right. Because there's a lot of guys built like Vince Will Fork walking around.
Yeah.
But
Vince Wilfork is also, by the way, Vince Wilfork is enormous, and I guarantee that he could beat any one of us at a foot race easily.
Oh, 100%. I have no interest in doing that.
Yeah.
Vince Wilfork's wife could beat me in a foot race.
Yeah. No, yeah, but I'm saying, but these guys are, because look, you do see a lot of guys walking around who look like Vince Wilfork, not walking around, but you see him sitting on the back of the bus. You see guys who
not
are,
that
you
tall.
Know, I'm saying you see enormous people almost every day in New York City.
We travel on different buses.
I guess so. Listen, you see people like that in New York City every day. But that's what I'm saying. The fact that he's that size, it's sort of like the Muggsy Bogues thing in the opposite direction. He must be an insane athlete. And if he was smaller, I think he could be a wide receiver in the NFL. The same way if Muggsy Bogues was 6'6", he would have been Michael Jordan. Because to be that athletic at that size is just incredible.
I loved the montage of him playing basketball too.
Yeah, that was a good one. All right, so you know we've covered this team inside and outside. Now it's time for everyone's favorite segment, although I said that about the roster game for Akiva. So I guess this is my favorite segment. Let's go to the schedule. We already know a lot of these games because they're going to be on national TV and because we've spoken to your opponents in every single game this year because the only teams we have left are the Packers and Seahawks, and we haven't got to the – you guys aren't playing them this year.
We're not.
You get the NFC East. But let's start in week one, tomorrow night, Thursday Night Football against the Steelers. You can still get a ticket for $305 on StubHub.
Oh, wow. I'm there. I think the Pats win this game. I think it's a terrible spot for the Steelers with no Lev Bell, no Bryant, and the fact that they're opening the season on the defending champions' home field. They have to see the banner being dropped. I feel like the only team that's ever kind of won that as the road game was the Cowboys a few years ago.
Yeah, I think those defending champions are 8-1 since they went to that. Is that right?
I think so. But didn't Baltimore lose to Denver a couple years ago too?
Yeah,
that
Brady
was weird.
Yeah,
it was
Peyton threw 8 touchdowns.
Yeah, it was weird.
So yeah, but it was at Denver. So it was, yeah, it didn't.
Oh, that's back when the Orioles.
Right, that was because they got moved because of some others because of the
playoffs.
Orioles.
Wasn't it the Orioles?
Yeah, it was the Orioles regular season game. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So that's a win. Week two, you go at Buffalo to face Rex Ryan, who has always played the Pats pretty closely.
Yeah, he has. I'm gonna call that a loss. I think we lose week two to Buffalo in Buffalo.
Wow.
Yeah.
So a big emotional letdown after that big week one win.
Yeah, and you know, Tom is 20 games over 500 in his career against the Bills. So I think we have that working for us, but I feel like Rex is gonna throw everything to the wall at this game. And I feel like this is a game that the Pats drop.
You seem to be on a first name basis with Tom. We discussed at the end of yesterday's podcast his marital situation. Do you have any updates on that?
Well, apparently you haven't seen the carefully scripted response from his lawyer today about how they have a great relationship and everything.
Anytime someone questions my marriage, I bring my lawyer into it also. So that's.
I don't know. We'll stay tuned for that, I guess.
All right. So you're 1-1.
Yes.
You come home to face Jacksonville. I would imagine Brady also has a winning record against the Jaguars in his career.
I don't believe he's ever lost to the Jags, and I believe
this will be the biggest. I'll predict now. This will be the highest percentage of survivor or eliminator of the last 10 years. Patriots hosting the Jaguars.
No. I disagree. Akiva, no way. Because in week three, people aren't wasting a team that good on a team like.
Well,
you know,
it's not wasting. You use the Patriots in week three. You're going to save them for week seven when they lose to the Jets. Come on.
They have a lot of gimmies. They're playing Washington at home. They're playing
like
Tennessee at home.
That's much later in the season. You wait till week 15 to use the Patriots, and you'll be out.
Look, it depends on the size of your survivor pool.
If you look at the week one matchups. There's no good survivor.
Really?
For week one.
I haven't looked yet at our
it's
survivor.
It's terrible. Program. I looked at it today.
That's not
awful.
Good. That's not good. All right, fine. So is that a win or a loss, the Jacksonville game?
That's a win. It will be a win.
By the way, Akiva, I hate to tell you, but I think that one of the options in week one in Survivor is your beloved New York Jets.
Yes. I think the first two people who picked the Jets. I really should get on picking that, by the way, before people start sending picks. All right. So you guys have that early bye, and you already had a mini bye because you start the season with Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You have that first possible bye in week four. And now at 2-1, you go to Dallas for what we said will be the most watched game of the regular season.
I'm worried about this game. I think if it wasn't for the bye, so if they didn't have the bye week to prepare, I would absolutely say this is a loss at Jerry's World. But with the bye, yeah, I'm still going to say it's a loss. I feel like Romo to Dez is going to happen a few times, and I think they start 2-2.
Well, they did that last year. Didn't seem to hamper them.
And then you guys go to Andrew Luck and the Colts on Sunday Night Football the next week.
Until the Colts can show me that they can stay within two touchdowns of a Pat of the Pats. I will always pick the Pats. So I'm picking the Pats in that game.
And then you guys get your first look at Todd Bowles and the Jets in Foxborough.
That is a win as well.
And this is a really soft part of the schedule. You have a three-game homestand here. Well, the next one's on Thursday night, hosting Miami.
They will beat Miami in Foxborough, yes.
What do you think about Miami?
I think they're good.
Are they real contenders in the division? People are really selling them.
I don't know.
Selling them? People were buying them, I thought, weren't they?
Well, they're selling them as contenders.
Oh, you're mixing up here. You sell the ones you don't
contenders,
like.
Get your contenders here. 50-50 yeah. Like that.
Akiva's selling short on his contenders, yeah. But I think people were buying them when they thought Brady might be out for four games.
Sure. The Pats have never really, and it's only happened a couple times that they faced Sue, but they've never had a bunch of trouble with him. Cameron Wake has kind of done some things against the Pats. Yeah, like, I think that Miami will be 9-7. I think they'll be in the mix for a wild card, but I think they're going to fall short again this year. Kind of been the trend the past few years for them.
And then the last of the three-game homestand here, you host Kirk Cousins, Colt McCoy, RG3, and the Redskins.
That's a Pats win.
Okay. And then you go to New Jersey, and you face your most hated rival at the Giants.
Yeah. So remember what I said about, until the Colts can stick with the Pats for less than a touchdown. Until the Pats can show me that they can beat the Giants, I'm going to have to call that a loss.
I mean, those have been two, like, either way, three-point games based on some fluky, lucky plays. It's not like the Giants are blowing them.
Which was frustrating.
I think I might actually root for the Pats in that game because I can't stand these Giants, obnoxious Giants fans.
Absolutely.
And then you guys host the Bills on Monday Night Football.
That will be a win.
I feel left out as a Jets fan. You get a Thursday nighter against the Dolphins, a Monday nighter against the Bills, and the Jets games are just regular 1 o'clock games. Then you guys go to Denver for what could be a blockbuster Sunday Night Football game.
I see that as a win.
Is Manning going to be playing on November 29th?
Yes. I don't know how effective.
He was rooting desperately for his downfall.
Well, at this point, everything we've said has come true. You know, Tyrod Taylor's the starter. And, RG3's gone. We're really, giving dead juju to these teams.
As a Pats fan, I've always wanted to hate Peyton Manning, but I can't. I don't.
I hate him.
I have too much respect for him.
I thought you hated Brady. Akiva, you hate Manning also?
I hate anybody who's not, on my team. Like, if Peyton comes to the Jets, I'll like him, but I hated Brett Favre until we got him.
You know, it's funny, Mike. I felt I'm a Vikings fan, so I obviously hated the Packers. But I always had conflicted feelings about Favre. Also, I knew I was supposed to hate Favre, and I never really hated him that much in Green Bay. I didn't like him, to be clear, but I didn't hate him. But then towards the end of his career, I started liking him. Before he came to the Vikings, I liked him in his feuds with Rodgers, and then I liked him on the Jets, and then of course I liked him a lot that first year, especially at least in Minnesota. So I do see what you mean when your rival has a really good player that you're supposed to hate, but sometimes you can't.
Yeah, I just have a lot of respect for him. I hate his brother.
I was going to say, what did Cooper ever do to you? But I forgot his name, so I ruined my joke. All right, so you're 8-3 now.
Yeah. You guys come home and face the Chip Kelly and the Eagles.
I think that's a win. I think they can beat the Eagles.
And you guys go to J.J. Watt and the Texans and your old buddy Vince Wilfork.
What have you guys thought of Bill O'Brien on Hard Knocks?
We're both impressed with him. He's a really good speaker.
Yeah.
No. I strongly dissent.
What? You don't like Bill O'Brien? I thought you were pro O'Brien.
No. What I said is that every single Pats coach who's gone elsewhere has failed. And I
But if you just knew him from Hard Knocks, you'd be impressed with him, no?
No, because I see in him exactly what I saw in Brad Childress, which is a guy who wants to adopt sort of the Belichick arrogance and attitude, but doesn't have the gravitas to back it up. I also, I listen to Hang Up and Listen, which is a Slate sports podcast, which I really enjoy. And they were basically saying that Bill O'Brien is like the sine qua non. He is the most generic NFL head coach of all time, almost like he was made in a lab. He just spouts cliches. Nothing he says, I think, the players listen to. It's all curse words.
Penn State really slipped when he was gone. That's a good, sort of measuring stick.
I like Vrabel a lot better on that staff. I think Vrabel's been the breakout star of that.
Interesting that they're talking about like motivation guys, and they don't mention O'Brien. They're like, yeah, it's going to be Vrabel or it's going to be Watt, or yeah, Vrabel could be a head coach for sure.
See, I hate that whole part of being Bill Belichick is not a rah-rah guy. Bill Belichick is really, really smart and knows how
he doesn't give the speech in the middle. But don't you love seeing Romeo Crennel in the middle there? I love Romeo Crennel.
Oh, he's a cutie pie. I wish he was my grandfather.
He is like a grandpa. He should be, I don't know, like he might be, you know, he was out of his depth as a head coach, and even as a defensive coordinator, he needs like a solid system. But as like a D-line coach, he's like adorable in the corner there.
All right, yeah. So what's happening in this game?
The only thing against Vrabel is like sometimes he comes off as a dick on the show.
Sometimes.
So like I don't know how much people are going to love playing for him, but I've been impressed by him.
He's been winning that curse off battle with O'Brien, especially when you do by the minute, because he gets a lot less airtime.
I own a Vrabel Chiefs jersey because I lived in Kansas City for a year and taught. So before I went, I decided to buy a Mike Vrabel Kansas City Chiefs jersey. So there you go.
So
is that a win or a loss?
Then I'm just trying to distract from, I think it's a loss. I think Houston wins that game.
All right, so then the last three games are pretty easy, or at least the next two are really easy. You host the Titans, and Chester's saving this for Week 15 Survivor that he'll be out of by Week 5.
Well, because I'm picking the Jets in Week 1.
So. Oh, boy. You'll be out of it by 3:55 on Week 1.
Yeah. Count, baby.
I think the Pats beat Tennessee.
See, Pats beat Tennessee. You pick the Jets, and then, at about 8 minutes into the game, you're like, oh, like I bet my whole season on Ryan Fitzpatrick, and he literally can't complete a pass to Brandon Marshall. And the Jets have punted four times already. And, you know, like they're already out of time commercials at CBS, and it's 1:35. And
yeah, but they'll still only be losing. They'll still only be losing six.
Oh, totally, totally. And like the Browns will throw in some guys you've never heard of, you know, who are like running all over the place. Oh, man. Thank God I can't watch that game live.
I might pick your Vikings for Week 1.
Well, I try never to pick a road team in Survivor if I can afford it. And especially, look, I think the Vikings are going to win that game, but I'm not going to pick I want to see the Vikings do it before I jump all the way on the bandwagon. Although I did say they'd win that game by 3 touchdowns.
What about Miami? Isn't Miami like a pretty obvious pick for Week 1 against the Redskins?
I thought it was in Washington.
Oh.
If it was in Miami, I'd definitely go there.
Although not that Miami has any kind of home field advantage.
Oh, no.
That's true.
Yeah.
That might be where I go. Anyway, so then you guys go to the Jets.
I believe that's a win.
You believe. And then you end the season in Miami, and you think, well, this will not be for the division or anything like that.
I don't think so. I think they would have clinched. I'm going to call that a loss.
So 11-5.
Yeah.
That would be the worst record for the Pats since.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm a pessimistic Pats fan. You were probably expecting me to come on and say they were going to go like 14-2. I think Vegas has them at 10.5, right?
Yeah, but Vegas, nobody's ever going to predict it to have more than 11 wins just because.
I think the Broncos were at like 11.5 last year or something crazy like that.
Yeah. So you're 11-5. You have a win against Indy. You have a win against Denver also. So,
yeah,
and then you have a win against Pittsburgh. So you might be winning all kinds of tiebreakers, but you know, what kind of seed do you see at 11-5?
I can see them being a 2. I think Indy will.
That might be a 3-11-5.
Yeah, I think Indy might have a better record. And so I can see Indy finishing 12-4, Pats finishing 11-5 with an identical record to whoever wins the AFC West.
There you go. The Pats will be back in the playoffs, of course. And ultimately, at this stage in their careers, I think that all they are caring about is another Super Bowl. I think whether they go 11-5 or 12-4 and 13-3 is less relevant. People are predicting sort of the know-nothings. People like me are sort of saying, oh, what's going to happen is Brady and Belichick are going to run up the score like crazy, you know, like they did in 07 after Spygate, for example. Do you think that's going to happen and they're going to be like a record-setting offense this year? Or do you think, you know, Belichick is a little more reasonable. Brady's a little bit older. They're going to try and, you know, stay healthy for the playoffs. What do you think?
Randy Moss isn't walking through that door. Like they don't have the guy where Tom can just close his eyes and throw up a jump ball and say, all right, Randy, do your thing. I think they'll have a good year. I think there'll be weeks that they'll run up the score, but they do that every year. I mean, it's not like that was unique 2007. Yeah. And Tom doesn't need extra motivation. You know, he's just the most competitive son of a bitch that I can see. And I don't know. I love Tom Brady, and I don't know if I've made that very clear. I believe in the fact that they'll be where they usually are.
There you have it. Mike, thanks for joining us. You're on Twitter at unsuccessstory.com.
Correct.
Is that right?
Correct.
I hope that an unsuccess story is the story of the 2015 New England Patriots season. But nevertheless, I do thank you for coming on the pod. Well, I've wished good luck to most of our guests' teams this year.
Yeah, worst
but I'm not gonna pretend. Yeah, I'm not wishing the Patriots any good luck. I'm sorry. And that's look, I actually do like Robert Kraft. I think he's a good person. I think, you know, he's a very charitable dude. But I can't root for his football team. Although it would be great to see Roger Goodell have to grit his teeth, and you know, that'd be pretty funny to see, you know, see them on the podium together. But you know, we'll see what happens. Maybe we'll have you back for our postseason podcast, depending on how the New England season goes. Good
there
luck, Michael.
Love to have it.
Thanks for joining us, Akiva. We have two teams left, the two best teams in the NFL. Although you actually had New England ranked number one, so according to you, the second and third best teams in the NFL.
Yeah, Jets and the Redskins. Can't wait for tomorrow's podcast.
Yeah, so we're actually welcoming a former roommate of yours to discuss the Seattle Seahawks tomorrow. Is that correct?
Yes, much to his chagrin.
That he was your roommate, that he's going to be a guest on the
podcast.
Oh, that
he was my roommate.
All
of the
above.
He has nightmares about being my roommate still.
Too bad he wasn't your roommate for the past month, because as your wife could attest, he barely would have had to see you because he would have been recording podcasts all the time.
That's true.
Although, I guess when you were his roommate, you probably only had one room, so you would have been recording them in that room at 3 a.m. pissing you off.
It would have been awkward.
Yeah. All right, so we'll be back tomorrow to discuss the number two ranked Seattle Seahawks. Have a good night.